So what we're going to cover today, as I said, is we're going to interview Richard Hull from Richard Hull Builders, and we're going to talk about his journey in business because there's a lot of great lessons there, but also we're going to focus on how to work with builders, how we can get more work from builders, how we can be better organised and drive good margins through that work. So that's the focus of today, and we'll do that in a minute. But the area of marketing and sales delivery, which is what we're focusing on today, is a really key part of moving up that that million-dollar plumber or tradie ladder, and getting some really good ongoing good margin work from your builders can really help you build that business up from the sort of 500k million bracket right up into the 1 to 2 million bracket. And what we've found is working with the plumbers, with you guys, and with the electricians as well, is the guys who get up into that success level or up into the scale level, they have some good long-term clients they get big jobs from. So it's an important part of the program. Very few companies are doing 2, 3, 4 million just on maintenance work, for example. So it's an important part of that program. So question, guys, for you. This is a chance for you to put some thoughts down in the chat box. I want to know for you, why is it important for you now to be able to get good work from builders and to get high margin work and to get work from builders that that pay well? Why is that important for you now? Just pop your thoughts down and what you're hoping to get out of the session today as well. Just pop them down into the chat box and we can see see what people are looking to get out of the session today. Okay, so just as you're writing your comments down there, just grab a drink. All right, guys, we're back again. So I've got some questions here. Somebody says, I want to get rid of time-wasting builders. Russ, retain and service builder clients plus get more. Jeff, find out how a builder's mind works. Oh, it's a frightening place. G'day, Sonia. Looking to see how it can be a win-win and not push down in price. Okay. Mark, best way to approach builders. Awesome. Sean, free up time. No chasing money, chasing jobs. Excellent. Chris, g'day, Chris. Would allow us to invest more into our business to improve our service. Okay. Duncan, more consistent, constant work flow. Get good builders. Richard, raise profit percentage. Okay, cool. Trish, how to get builders more organized on site and so less visits required. Chris, nice shirt. Thanks, mate. We've been there already. Salmon pink. John, how to deal with client QS unreasonable price variation rejections. Nice. Mike and Tracy, regular cash flow. Jason, approaching new clients. Awesome. Okay, guys, so some great stuff there. That's all. Hi here, Robert, the gas man. G'day, Robert. How you going, mate? Peter, what is the main thing a builder is looking for in a plumber? Yep, awesome. Cool, guys. So those are all the reasons we've put this on today. So Richard's waiting in the ring. I hope you're taking notes, Richard. Cool, guys. Thanks for that. Appreciate it. Okay. So here's the problem. If we don't get this right, we don't have a good strategy for working with builders, or we don't potentially have any decent builders in our client base, what can happen? Well, a big one is, are you finding that you're chasing money? So you do the work, you don't get any deposits, you've got to pay your merchants, you've got to pay your guys, but you wait for weeks or months to actually get paid. And you end up being the bank. So bankrolling the construction company's projects. Or even worse, you get left in the lurch like a Stonewood Homes or other people who just let you down. Or do you have lumpy workflow? So you don't have those good, solid, big jobs that can absorb a lot of the guys' time and fill up your calendar and know you've got guys at one place for a day or two or three, and not have to organise a whole lot of small jobs to fill in the calendar. So is the workflow up and down? Or are you finding that there is a lot of mucking around? So poor organisation, both from potentially the builder, maybe from yourself if you're honest. So you go to, you know, fit off house and you find that perhaps the tiling isn't done, or some of the painting isn't finished, or you go to do the job and some of the materials that should have been there, told were there, are not there, and it causes you to have multiple trips, adds to your costs, disrupts the calendar. Robert's just said hi again, sorry, have to go out on a home emergency. Okay, so yeah, mistakes that cost you time and money. And particularly things like if you've planned the day and then the project's not ready and you've got to go and reshuffle the calendar and run around and try and find work to fill the guy's time in. What's the opportunity? So if we get this right, how can it work for us? Well, you get some good solid builders on your book, you can have consistent and ongoing work. And in many respects, they do the sale for you. Because they get the client and they subcontract the work to you, which is good. Low sales overhead makes it easy for you to fill up the week, the calendar. Next one, if you work hard and build good relationships with your builders, you can actually get into the situation where you're doing negotiated contracts. So it's not a tender, it's not, you know, five guys quoting and a race to the bottom. And I think Richard's going to touch on this quite a bit as we go through today as well. A lot less overheads as well. So if you have bigger projects, there's less hassles, less admin, less mucking around. You don't have hundreds of invoices to deal with. You might only have several invoices. So that's a big one as well. Okay. Welcome, Roger. We're looking for reliability in plumbers who do what they say they're going to do. Communication is the key. So Roger's a builder. Happy days. Welcome aboard, mate. So what happens if you get it right? Well, Mark from Advanced Plumbing, he's built a large part of his business around working with high-end builders. And he's developed really clear systems and processes to support that. And he spends most of his time building relationships with the building companies in the Hawke's Bay, doing the high-end work. He's got a real targeted niche. Sales have gone up by 1.6 million. He's getting good margins in the high 30s up to 40%. He's just generated massive cash flow. Mainly by working with builders, does very little repairs and maintenance work. Well, Brad from Leading Edge Electrical. So Brad targets builders almost exclusively. He does a small number of jobs a month. He only has a part-time admin person. And since he's really hooked into the strategies, profits have doubled, turnover's more than doubled. He has a program for consistently getting new builders, so he gets one or two new builders every 6 months, and he's off the tools in his business, and he's only got four tradesmen. So the strategy can work really well. Okay, so what we're going to do now is we're going to jump in and invite Richard to come on board, and we'll go through the interview. So Richard, I'm just going to share the cam with you, mate. I'll make sure I get the right one. All right, there's me. Okay. There we go. G'day, mate. How are you going? Okay. Right. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
Awesome. Welcome aboard, mate. Good to have you on board.
Thank you.
Awesome. So, what we're going to do, Richard, we'll just ask you some questions, mate, and you just tell us your thoughts, and if we have questions come through, I'll just fire them through. Just by way of introduction, so Richard from Richard Hull Builders is in the Waikato, and he's got an established building company who specialises mainly in renovation work, so he's Waikato's number one renovation and alteration specialist. He also does some new houses as well. He's past president of the Master Builders Association, the immediate past president, and has also been a coaching client of ours over the last few years as well. So welcome in, mate. Let's get started. Look, just tell us how you got started and what you hope to achieve when you actually got into business.
Yeah, thanks, Tony, and welcome all. When I started out in business, I was about 20, I think I was 22, and so like most young guys, you don't know about a lot of different things in business, marketing and all the rest, but you got the opportunity to go out there and do some work for generally people you know, and so I got stuck into a few houses and a few labour-only contracts. And then sort of worked out that once you got to the end of a couple of houses, the phone just doesn't ring unless you put yourself out there and start getting some marketing happening. And then even then you think marketing's a whole crock of something. So you
proverbial.
Yep, that's one. And it's most probably taken about 20 odd years to work out that, and Tony's help to work out what marketing really is and how it can help me in my own business.
Sure. Okay.
So, you fire away, Tony.
Sure, mate. So just talk us through the stages that your building company went through. I mean, you've had some really good times, some challenging times. So, you know, how long did each stage take? And how does business look today?
So when I started out, same old story. A guy, a ute, and a dog, and away you go. And then I just built it up, one or two boys working underneath me, going hard, obviously doing everything myself. And that was good, started making money, so everything was all right. So then you take on a few more guys, and of course you double your crew, double the problems. And then you start getting all the employment stuff coming out because you haven't got that all in line. Guys just taking the piss, really. And so... the stages sort of went, I went up to, I don't know, 10 guys pretty quickly, and then, had all those issues, and then had the workflow issues, so then that hurt a bit, so I had to sneak it back a bit. Obviously, the tougher times, or the leaner times, seem a lot longer than the better times, but as you go through it, you're learning everything as you go through. And sometimes it's those blood noses that you learn the most from and you work out where you are. And to be honest, it's only in the last couple of years that I've worked out where my market is. And then, of course, once you work that out, then things just start falling into your lap as far as what work you want, what work you need. And like you alluded to earlier about, some of the employees or the builders around town start knocking on your door for wanting jobs.
Okay, yeah. And what's your target area now?
So we focus our marketing as far as on alterations and renovations, and so we get the day-to-day calls about doing bathrooms and refitting kitchens and doing those. So that's good. That we enjoy doing a raft of different size alterations and different even small maintenance jobs. But what we really specialise in is the design build alterations. So that's when a client rings up and says, hey look, we're wanting to build on an ensuite and a master bedroom onto the back of our house. Can we do it? Is the section big enough? We're not sure how much it costs. We need to go to the bank to get a loan. How's it all work? And so before we even get before they've spoken to an architect, And he's made the house far too big or basically blown the budget before they even know what the budget is or drawn plans, then we get involved, we do an estimate of what it's going to cost to do that project for them, and that covers everything from the planning, permits, engineering, obviously the build side of it. So we estimate the plumbing, the electrical, the painting, the plastering, the flooring, the right up until it's finished, and then that gives them a good scope, broken down, that they can go to the bank, get their money. They might even already have the money, even better. And then they engage us. We engage the architect, the engineer, and run that project through.
Okay. So you alluded to some of the tough times there, mate. Would you be able to tell the guys a little bit about that? Because I know you did have some pretty tough times, which were character building. Or is it just a nightmare?
You're not going to make me cry, are you, Tony? So I guess the tough times are when, and I think that comes down to stress. Everybody has stress. And I think only in the last 2 years I've worked out what stress is for me. And stress is the unknown, and it sounds pretty simple, but it's the unknown because a classic example would be that you're under pressure, you've got a client ringing you up, you know, when's this going to be finished, when's it going to be finished? The stress is they're putting that on you because I don't know because I'm waiting for the painter to confirm that he can be there next week. The painter, the head of the crew, he doesn't know because his guys haven't finished the job they're supposed to be on. So it all just creates this big pile of stress that goes right throughout the whole industry. And so, and then of course, plumbers and electricians, once it's painted, you have to be there Friday afternoon to fit off so they can move back in on Saturday. So that's what creates the whole stress. So if you take it back and you can tell the client,
they probably don't know. You like to joke sometimes, mate.
Oh yeah, okay. So the stress is if you can tell the client, look, I don't actually know, and this is why. I'll be able to tell you on Thursday that whether the paint is starting Monday or Tuesday next week, and finding out from the client why they're getting into your head about, you know, are they renting for another week or something like that, is about, and so that comes down to communication. So I guess that's part of why I feel so comfortable where we're at the moment, because I've worked on strategies to make sure that we lower that stress. And that's not only for myself, it's for my staff and making sure that they're aware what the clients are thinking, what the subbies need and all those sorts of things.
So I just have actually a question coming here from Chris, he's in Auckland. He says, do you charge a fee while they are at the conceptual stage? How much time do you invest before money needs to start coming your way?
Yeah, good question. Two different things there. So I normally gauge and I gauge where the client's at. So if they haven't purchased the building, so quite often we'll get a call saying, hey, look, looking at buying this house, can you come and price because we want to do an alteration to it? It's like, well, likelihood that they're going to be able to purchase the house by the time they get the alteration price, the bank clearance, they're going to be bidding against X amount of people in the auction. It's like someone doing a house inspection or someone doing one of those P reports, similar. It's like, no, that becomes a consulting service. So I said, no, look, that's going to cost you, and it's generally 250 plus just. And so that way I'm assured to get paid, and I'll put some effort into getting that within 2-3 days, get that quote back to them and make sure that all works in their time frames, as opposed to somebody who rings up and they just don't know where they're going to go with that price. So normally I do not charge for the people who are phoning us up and they've got their own house and they're working through the process. More likely to get those jobs than we are to get the jobs where they haven't even purchased the building or house.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Okay, so what have been your biggest frustrations and challenges along the way, mate? And how have you dealt with those with growing your business?
Well, there's a list of them, I suppose. It's staff, clients, subbies.
Sounds like business.
Yeah, plumbers. Jesus. At different times, there's different problems and different stresses. And once you think you've got all your employees right, you've got the right amount of guys, you've got the right amount of vehicles, you've got the right amount of tools, something comes up, someone gets a divorce and they have to leave town and you lose your head guy so there's always different problems that crop up. So you can't stress about that, you've just got to move on. There's always somebody else that can fill that gap and potentially they can do it, if not as good, maybe better. So you got to look at the bright side when all of that sort of stuff crops up. What was the question? What's that?
So the question was, what are the biggest frustrations and challenges along the way? And how did you deal with
them? Yeah, so I think, and once again, like workflow most probably comes into that. We're running sort of about 14 to 15 guys at all different size projects. So with our alterations, we have some weeks we might have five guys with nothing to do the next week. Next week, like what's today? So Friday, we might not have anything booked in for five guys for Monday onwards. So it's about sort of spreading those guys out onto our other jobs, or it's about trying to bring something else forward, and can we do that? Can we book our plumber in to do it? Do we need the electrician first? So it's about working through, I guess like that, the workflow and the communications.
Okay, cool.
That's needed.
Yep. So something that you and I've talked a lot about, and I think big strides that you've made, what have been the key mindset shifts that you've had to make as a person and as a business owner to go from, you know, cash flow problems, just getting by, to now really profitable and really comfortable and landing your first Marlin a couple of weeks ago?
Thanks for bringing up cash flow, Tony. That's like a shudder. That would be the worst, one of the worst things, actually. So you asked me what was the lows, and I must have said a couple of questions ago. I mean, three or so years ago, the biggest low would have been having about $250K to pay on the 20th. I was already 3 months out on most of my contractors, and we had about 2 to 3 weeks of work in front of me with five guys. As I said, five guys with nothing to do, and the other 10 were booked in for those 3 weeks. And bugger all income. So that was a low, I guess.
Yeah.
But so I guess, for me, the learnings were, and at that point, actually, I went to, I actually called a meeting with all my subcontractors and got them all there at once. So right from my window supplier, my plumber, my electrician, the lot. Got them all into my office. Just managed to, I had to put on the visa, of course, but shout them all a beer and say, hey, look, this is where I'm at. I'm hoping within a year's time that I'll be up on my accounts and I'll be able to pay you on time by the 20th. I used to say that it would have been sort of 5 years ago, that wasn't an issue. And so they all understood. They knew exactly where I was. They gave me some leniency to basically trade my way out of it. And they, you know, still kept my credit lines open, and through communication, we all got through it. And now they're reaping the benefits of us getting our standard work.
Yep. So what was the key mindset shifts and strategies that you had to put in place to actually, you know, change that for yourself?
Mindset. A couple of different things. At that time, I was in the point of growth and what I had, my office structure staff, having a QS on board, trying to free, and this most probably goes a little bit against what's the philosophy of, I'll take that back a step. Before I got involved with Tony, I'd actually had some other business coaches and talked to different people about it, and it was all like, oh, you just need to sell more, you just need to be bigger, you need to have things in place that you can just do more work, which isn't actually totally the way to do it. It's about making sure that you've got the infrastructure that you can do the work that you're doing and do it well, and then that gives you the room to grow. You can add 2-3 more builders in behind if you've got a good structure. You don't
need good to have margins.
Yeah, and that gives you the confidence that you're doing it right. So being busier sometimes isn't more profitable, as we all know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Awesome. So just got a question from Trish here. How involved in staff personal lives do you get? How do you define the boss friend line? That's a big sigh.
Yeah, it is, because I'm. You obviously employ 15 guys or so at a time, and I hate to think how many guys I've been through or had and just had to go, no, look, this is not working for us both. Let me help you find you a new job. Who's that with? I don't really mind, but you need to find another job. So there's a bit of those conversations that need to go on. So it is difficult because you are, for me, some of them I am their income, their, you know, if they don't have me, and you've got to really draw the line. I have some guys who will be saying, oh, can I have next week's wages early? Can I have this? And so you've got to be quite firm of where you are with them, and it's like, no, you can't. But I run a tool account system where they can, if they can't get the car fixed, they can put it on this on their tool account. I pay for it straight away, and then they pay me off as it goes through their tool account. So there's ways and means that you can not needing to, because it's admin time and mucking around and have you pay them and all that sort of stuff, starts to cut into what, you know, you taking you away from actually running a business and starting to babysit 10, 15 guys.
Yep, okay. So how do you... Sorry, mate.
You should be. No, we'll...
Okay, no, you will be. Yeah. Okay, so how do you manage the whole work-life balance situation?
Good one. I've got the best work-life balance I've ever had over the last year. And I can just about see you patting yourself on the back there, Tony. And that came down to I was doing huge hours. I'd go to the office at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'd get home obviously late, or if not after 6, try and get home before the kids went to bed. And then I'd end up working half the weekend to catch up on stuff. So that's even when I had a QS working for me. So I alluded to earlier that I actually changed that around a bit, and I took out my QS, so I do the pricing and things now, thinking, oh, I'm never going to be able to manage with the workload of that. But in reality, I'm far clearer on what I'm doing, what I need to do, whether we are going to price that job or not. And
you win more.
Yeah, I do win more. So the work-life balance for me is I said this to Tony a little while ago, it's actually me getting over myself a little bit and thinking, you know what, I don't have to be at the office all the time, because the amount of stuff that we price, whether it goes ahead or not, and how much effort I put into that, the owner's not going to thank me in 20 years when I haven't got a wife, my kids don't know me, and I'm still driving that same crappy old ute that I was 20 years ago. So I think it's about putting it, that whole stress thing, putting it in line. So yeah, I do go to the office early, and that's, to be honest, most days of the week, but now I've cut it back that I'm not allowed to get up before 5 o'clock. At least one day a week I'm at home to for the kids when they wake up, to have breakfast with them, and so that's one weekday, and preferably take them to school. I do a lot of, if the kids got anything on through athletics or rugby or something like that, or a school thing, the way I structure my day is that I can shoot out and catch up and watch them run the cross country or do whatever. So it's good to be part of those activities. So I make that a point. I mean, at the end of the day, they're the ones you're doing this all for. So I really make that a point that sort of thing, that you want to be there and you want to see that your kids achieve.
And I think something else you've done well is your default diary and your exercise and your learning. So just tell the guys what you've done with that.
Yeah, so when I started with Tony, I was on this big, look, I've got a change. I was sitting at about 130, 35 kgs and just getting bigger and bigger and thinking, oh, I'm just stressing out. So I started the exercise scheme and sort of the mind-body business and have worked it to the point where now I actually go to the gym 3 times a week. 12 o'clock through to about 1:30, and it's a big chunk of your day, right in the middle of your day, but same thing, the person you're who wants to see you that day that you have to push your diary out for, they're not going to thank you in 20 years when you're suffering health problems. So for me, it's like, no, that's my default diary. I've told all my guys that if I don't answer my phone during between 12 o'clock and 1:30 on a weekday, I'll ring you back later, and they understand that. And same thing about the employee thing, they realise if I'm not at my optimum or working, then that we're going to start running out of work pretty quickly.
Awesome. Okay. So what are the three biggest lessons that you'd have for business owners who are stuck? Most of the guys in our program are, got three or four guys or bigger. So what are the key lessons you'd have for them? They're stuck, but they want to take their business to the next level. And it's just struggling to do it.
Yeah. I think a lot of businesses, I guess, most probably, not panic's most probably not the right word, basically chase the tail a little bit too much, as far as making sure that once you know that you've got a good structure in place, and that's most probably just making sure that you've got everything in place so you can grow a little bit more. And that's about, and we talk about the, how you change your lifestyle and work-life balance. If you were to have a really good 2IC that if you're not there, he's going to pick it up and maybe not price something, but definitely help out your best clients when they need it. So that's sort of what I've done. I've got a guy who's worked for me for 10 years or so, and I know that I can rely on him if something goes wrong and he needs to go out on the weekend to fix something, I know I can call him. So it's about making sure that you've got a good team as well, I think. Yeah.
And what about the numbers side of it, mate, because you've put a lot of effort into that?
Yeah, a lot of numbers. I guess, I don't want to throw it back in Tony's face, but the numbers are really important. And what I found that the more I started stressing about the numbers and going over them and over them, I sort of ended up coming up with my own little what's important for me and my business, what numbers do I need to look at, and making sure, I like monitoring things anyway, so for years I've got a spreadsheet data of how much fuel we use per vehicle per month type thing, what vehicle's costing me, what vehicle's not. It really came down to making sure that I profit and loss each job, knowing where the margin is on each job, and I think it sort of alludes to back into me doing the price, because no matter how much you tell a QS or tell somebody else that, hey, look, we're not making money on that job, they'll just whack up the margin or you really got to learn where you're missing, whether that's the labour or the materials or the, travel for you guys would be quite big. So I just making sure that, and it comes down to a default diary of where were we at, and the last job we did like that, it wasn't that good. Why was that? Was it the guy that we had on running that job, or was it our subbies? So a lot of it comes down to, just having the inert feeling of, okay, those jobs there are a bit of a nightmare. I either need to charge more or potentially not do them.
So the back costing is pretty important.
Back costing, yeah.
Yeah, massive. Okay, cool. So let's talk a little bit more about, just one question here from Trish. How many of your staff are employed or wages versus contractors?
Yeah, good question. The way I run my business is they're all employed on wages, and I don't have any labour-only contractors. It may change in the next 6 months or so. We mainly do, with our alterations and renovations, and that's like, why would you have 15 staff when you can have labour-only guys come in and out? I tried that early on. Some guys were good. I had, a gang of two guys, and they'd get stuck in, and then you get to the end of that project, and they're like, oh, no, we're off to another project, and we can't do your next one. Bam, you're left with a hole you've got to fill really quickly. So I worked out pretty quickly that I need I work on loyalty, so I need good loyal guys, and try and look after them the best you can. You're never going to employ the same type of tradesman that you were if you're a good tradesman on the tools and things. So you've got to look at as long as they're doing over 80% of what you would be doing. So that's work speed or quality is still going to be up there. Then you've sort of got to take for granted that they're going to make a few mistakes, and there's going to be the little rework, and there's going to be that, but you're better off to have them than not have anything at all.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, mate. Well, let's talk more specifically about the relationship between builder and subcontractor. So let's get this right out in the open right from the get-go. Is price the only thing you worry about?
Oh, shit, yeah. The,
okay.
No, it's not. No, yeah, I knew you wouldn't want to hear that. No, it's not. No. It really for me, and I guess, yeah, to put it out in the open, as I said, a lot of our jobs that I actually do all the estimating. So I've sat down with my plumber and my electrician and worked out set prices for installation of plumbing wear or fitting off a kitchen sink with a incinerator in, or how much per metre would it cost me to do drainage. So I've got my own spreadsheet that I work through on that. So about 70 to 80% of the work that my plumber does for me, I price. And he just adds all on charge up. So he just charges up. And then and that sort of back costing thing. And then I assess what I priced to what my actual bill with him was. Quite often, it can be over, but not by very much. So then I'm learning from that too and going, oh, okay, perhaps I need to bump up my figures. And then we'll sit down and we'll work through it. And if it's really majorly out, I'll go, man, I didn't see that coming. Where are we at? So that doesn't mean I get to go back to the client. It means I have to take that on the chin. But you know, you've got to have enough margin in it across the board.
What's the advantage of that system for you?
Availability and speed. So when I'm pricing, and I mean we price. So the design build alterations, we'd price let's 2-3 of those a week. And then bathrooms and stuff. So we're pricing sort of 40 to 50 jobs a month. So my plumber doesn't want to go out to each of those jobs and go, oh right, it's just fitting a new toilet. That's okay. That was a waste of my time. So that doesn't sort of like from a communication and a working together point of view, that doesn't work for him because you know we're not going to get all that work. But when it comes to that, I've got a set of plans, and I've got, right, okay, here we go, we've got a house lot or a big alteration that I've already done the design for, then I'll have a meeting with a site meeting, plumber, electrician, drain layer, painter if need be, plastering, and get them all in there at once and go, right, this is a project that's coming up, this is what we're going to do, please price it back to me, and away we go.
Okay, cool. There's a question here actually from Chris. As well, do you try to develop your staff's weaknesses or do you just utilise their strengths?
You actually got to do both. So we have the old horses for courses. We've got guys who are slightly better at commercial stuff and love doing boxing and pouring concrete, and so that's good.
Happy days.
Yeah, right. And that, because that's what he did when he was an apprentice. So if I've got a job coming up like that, then that's right. I know Ian's my man for that. Same thing, you know, we've got been alterations and stuff. We don't have to be out running around the top of top plates, putting up trusses and scaling up the side of buildings. So we've got a few older guys who work for us who don't want to do heavy lifting. They just want to do the bathrooms, and they've already been employed, self-employed, for 30-odd years, and they're just quite happy to tick away doing the bathroom and know that they've got a job and things are tickety-boo. But then there are weaknesses on all of those. So that comes down to communication and how, as a company, we're expecting to have that job finished. So we might get... and I guess that falls into place, like say our concrete man there. If he's in, we can't but put him into a bathroom. They've got to do for us a myriad of work from be able to do a new house right through to doing alterations and then the small refits. So we would know that he's not 100% the right man for this job, but we know that his weaknesses are, I don't know, potentially his finishing and cutting the work, skirting and stuff like that. So we'll go, right, we'll mention it to him before he goes out. Like, this one's, you know, take your time. This one, you've got to get this one right because we don't want to come back for this. And so that bleeds from me through to my site manager, who runs our guys, that it'll be me giving him the nudge to go around and have a look at that job while he's partway through to make sure that we're on the right track.
Okay, awesome. So, mate, what are the best subbies that you work with? What do they do differently that makes you choose to want to work with them?
I guess that comes down to communication and sort of when I talked about how we do the pricing and things like that earlier, sometimes I'll be leaning on those guys for information about, hey, look, I've got this project coming up. I don't even know whether we can put a bathroom down that end of the house. It looks like it's going to be an issue. Let's go and can you come with me and we'll have a look? So it's a little bit of leeway that... The amount of charge up work that we get, it's not an issue for my plumber to come with me. We go around, we have a look, he'll throw it around, look it up whether the drains are. So he did a little bit of homework for me and that project can happen. And so there's a little bit of goodwill, I guess, there. And same thing, he'll ring me up and want to use our harnesses, our truck, or whatever it may be, or half a sheet of jib. So it goes both ways. But I guess overall, good subbies. For us, it's about availability. It's about...
When you talk about availability, what do you mean by availability?
Well, I mentioned earlier, like sometimes we'll get a job and we might be planning out. We try and plan out sort of more like Wednesday, Thursday, what we're actually going to need from our subby the following week. But we'll get the odd one where like, hey, can we have a plumber tomorrow? And they're more likely to say yes than no for us because we've always pretty much got a plumber on site every day of the week on a different site. So that comes down to our site manager knowing what jobs he's got on, when he's got the plumbers booked in, and maybe he can shift plumber from one job to another job just to make things work. So availability is, I guess, across the board would be that, A, you've got enough guys that you can move when your builder's asking. We don't like to ask them to be there tomorrow, and I guess most guys get that call, right, ready for the fit-off, come and do it tomorrow. So you want to have enough guys, well, we want our subbies to have enough guys that they can fit off where need be, that it's not on, we're a week away, when we were wanting to start a job next Thursday.
Availability in terms of, that's for tradesmen, but in terms of the office side of it, being able to contact people, all that sort of stuff.
When I say enough staff, that's sort of across the board and having a good system where... I guess most of our, we have painters. We have about four or five different painters. So right down from a one-man band to guys with about 30 guys. But it comes down to horse of the courses where we would use those guys on different jobs. But we, I guess, understand or know that our one-man band, he only likes doing the small jobs and when we send him an email, he replies, yes, he can do it, and away we go. So you don't have to have, you know, three office staff waiting there to take the phone calls, but you have to have a system in place that it's not all going through. And this is me. A lot of guys most probably find it tough, is that the head of the business, the top man, if he's taking all the phone calls and trying to book the jobs and run his own guys, then it's just all too much. You can't do everything, so you've got to be able to delegate that stuff to make sure that your office lady or office staff can deal with a certain amount of issues. And then if it goes, you know, if it's just too much, then that's when the boss gets involved.
Okay, awesome. So anything else that they, you know, good subbies do differently, which is, you know, important from your perspective?
I guess communication. Like, there's always, you know, there's always mistakes. You chip the bath or whether whatever it is. So it's about working through that and making sure that your guys or the plumbers that work for you, you know, put their hand up straight away and say, oh, look, we've had a mistake, we've marked this, we've scratched that. You're just going to get that. Everybody makes a mistake. But as from a builder's point of view, if we can ring the owner and say, oh, look, yeah, we've finished, but hey, look, there is a scratch in the bath, before they get home from work, instead of them finding it and then ringing me at 6 o'clock on a Friday saying, oh, the bath's scratched, what are you going to do? It just takes all the heat and all the stress, all the aggro out of anything that could go wrong. So,
That's all good. So, what are the three things a subby can do that would cause you to start looking elsewhere?
You've got to charge a reasonable price for what you do. And so if your builder doesn't think that's a reasonable price, then you've got to communicate how that's made up and how that's worked out. But if you start taking the piss, then that would make you think, oh, well, perhaps I better look somewhere else. I guess if they drop you in it, as in, yep, we're teed up to fit off on Friday, and then you've organised that a week earlier or half a week earlier, and then they ring you on Friday morning saying, nah, can't do it, too busy. It's like, well, hang on, how's that going to help us work through? So, yeah, that comes down to communication, because you will have, we had one just last week, we had a fit-off, it was a full day for two guys. They rang us on Wednesday, said, no, we haven't got enough guys, we're going to only have one guy there. Okay, I can pass it off, we can, as long as we get one bathroom up and running in this alteration, we'll be all right. They rang me the Friday morning, oh, the guy's sick, we've got no other guys. So then the 2IC, I just said, oh, well, perhaps it's the big fellow who needs to come out and fit off the toilet. And this is the 2IC making the phone call. He said, oh, no, I better come and do it myself. So he came out and got one toilet up and one basin up, and that was enough that I could talk the clients through. So it's about communication. So if you didn't have that communication and it got to 9 o'clock on Friday morning and then I'm ringing them, that would be not a good thing.
So not taking it on the chin. I mean, if you can be upfront about what's happening, then there's no problem you can't solve.
Oh, yeah. And that takes, like I talked about, stress is the unknown earlier, that, you know, if you can take it back and talk it through with the client that, hey, look, you know, people were sick, mistakes happen, this is, you know, not right, then that normally takes the heat out of a lot of situations, because the builder is getting it from the client, not only about why the plumbing isn't done, but the painting, there's a scratch in the painting, the floors aren't quite right, this isn't right, you know, so they're starting to get that stress all around from and having to deal with, I don't know, as it is, 10 to 20 different subbies to make sure everything's tickety-boo for the client.
Okay, so how do you feel about subcontractors having apprentices on site when it's charge-up work?
I don't mind paying for, and we had this with our plumber, he was charging me tradesman rate for an apprentice, and I said, look, I don't mind that, as long as he's doing near on, or if not, what a tradesman can do. And he's like, yeah, no, that's fine. And so a week, 2 weeks went by, and I said, look, we've had a little mistake here, a little mistake there, this isn't quite right. You know, it's taking too long, in my opinion. But hey, you tell me if that's how long it should take to do that job. Now we don't have that guy on site, but that came down to communication of me talking it through with my plumber. So on a whole, and I'm no different. We've got apprentices, and we need them. We need them on site. You can't have 15 tradesmen with no one to do, you know, that initial grunt work those smaller jobs. So I think it comes down to communication, and I think it comes down to training. If you can train your guys to get up to speed really quickly, because there's heaps of second, third year apprentices who are keen and can do just as well as a tradesman. They need to obviously still learn a few skills because they think obviously they know it all, and that's mostly a generational thing as well. But it's all about, I guess that comes back to those systems, making sure that, okay, are those, you know, and knowing the guys or kids, that making sure you know their limitations and what you'll need to be keeping an eye on.
Okay. So, important question, real challenge for subbies, mate, is when they're booked in to do a job and they turn up and something's not finished. So maybe it fitting off the house, but some of the vinyl's not done or the tiling, and it causes rework or having to come back, which is very costly, obviously, for subcontractor. So how do you feel about the subcontractors charging you for that when they were told that it was ready, because it's, you know, it might only be a 20-minute job, but it costs them an hour and a half of time coming back. Is that an issue? How have you dealt with that with your subbies?
It is an issue, and it is something that I actually talk with my plumber and about quite often, because I guess especially in the alteration market, we're sort of like, oh no, we need to have only that toilet and that basin, repiped, and we need to keep the other ensuite up and running, but so we need you back at the end of the week to swap it over. So I sort of take that into account when I'm pricing, and as I said, most of it's charged up for me. So it's actually me running my guys that or keeping on top of them. Hey, look, make sure that we're not just going to do the toilet and then get them back for the basin, and then at the end of the week do one or two other things, try and lump them all in together. And I guess as far as not having it finished. Question out to the plumbers and electrician: how many of you phone up the morning that you're about to come out to say, right, we're coming out, we're going to be there at 8 o'clock, is everything right, ready to go for us? I know that's most probably too late for you to go and get more work or organise things, but it's knowing and keeping on top of that builder, and I guess you've got to start to, it'll become evident what the builder's like. If they're never ready, then ring the day before, ring 2 days before.
I think Richard has just said we phone the day before, so we have time to organise the gear, and that's what we, the guys in the program, there's some scripts actually, they're pre-job checklists, and you have to be very specific with the questions you ask of the contractor as well. It's no point just saying, is it ready, saying, well, is the flooring ready, is all the material there that we need, all the fixtures, is the painter finished? Because if you're specific, then they're like, oh yeah. Because it's not necessarily that the builder's trying to be difficult, they're just busy and forget shit.
Oh yeah, exactly. Like if my plumber rings me now and says, oh, we're fitting off that job today, is it ready? I'll be like, I'm not sure. You should be talking to my foreman on site or my site manager. I can call him and find out and come back to you. So it's about knowing who to talk to as well, whether you're talking to the foreman, the protocol is that you talk to the boss and the boss is sorting everything out. So different size businesses, obviously, and project managers and all those sorts of things come into it. So you want to make sure that you've got a good relationship with not only the boss, but the project managers. And if you're getting that inkling that, hey, look, he's never ready, how do I broach the subject with the boss? And can I catch up with the boss for a cup of coffee and just make sure that everything's online and we're doing everything you need and rah, rah, rah. And by the way, your foreman's never ready. It's killing us.
That's right. And that's where your back costing and stuff comes in as plumber and electrician. And Mark Watkins, who I mentioned earlier, found that they were doing 20, 21 trips to build GJ Gardner houses, which is insane. And they figure that out by doing the back costing, so they put the pre-job checklists in place, so they check that all in beforehand, and that's cut the job, the number of trips by a third, just by asking better questions. So those scripts are in the membership site, guys, if you want to download those and version them as well. So Chris has just said here, I call on Monday and the day before, but some of the chippies don't really know where things are at. Yeah, get a new client, job overruns, and these sometimes get looked over. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So it's not perfect, but that's some of the strategies there. Sorry, Matt.
No, Karen.
So another question that I really would like to cover off is, and Duncan has asked it here as well, is, let me find it here. How would a potential plumber seal the deal and get more work or a portion of your work? I.e., what's the best way for a plumber or electrician or subcontractor to market to a builder, in your opinion?
I don't know. Look, I think I look at my own situation. You know, I think I changed plumbers about 10 years ago. Oh, no, maybe less. Eight, so years ago. And at that time, I don't know, it wasn't that I wasn't feeling the love from the plumber that I had. It was actually the middleman, the I guess the 2IC, the guy who books in all the jobs and stuff. He was shagging us around and dropping and, nah, we didn't have you booked in and stuff like that. So that's for me. At that time, I was thinking, oh, this isn't really sort of working for me. It's harming my business more than helping it. We'd had this other guy do just a couple of little jobs for us and thought, oh, well, we'll see if we can see if he wants to do any more. You know, and then sort of, I guess, went from there. So to secure the work, it's always a hard one. Don't try and do it by price. That'll just kill you. And because once you go in at price, that's it. You're stuck there. My plumber's definitely not the cheapest. And but I know I can ring him up and get something done urgently if we need it. And vice versa, he throws a bit of work my way. So I guess that's looking out there. I talked about loyalty earlier. That's for my plumber. I'd most probably get. Because he's out there looking at people, ring him up, oh, you know, come and we want to do a bathroom, and his first question is like, oh, have you got a builder? Oh, no, we just want to change around the bathroom. He's like, well, you need a builder, and normally he refers us, hey, look, get these, we'll do the work for him, but get these guys to come in and organise everything, and then we'll be happy to do the work for him. So there's occasions where he might be billing the client separately, or these other occasions, once we go and see them and say, look, we'll take care of the whole lot, then, you know, that's a pretty good, like, referral system between yourselves is always good.
Yep. So, I mean, the strategies we've found work well, guys, and some of this is in the membership site too, is it is about relationships for the, and it can take some time. Is that a fair comment?
To build a
relationship.
Yeah,
so, I call it a customer farming strategy. And for instance, with builders, it's about getting a list of builders. Don't just target one or two. Go big, because it is a bit of a numbers game. And it's having a process for actually targeting those in a consistent way to build the relationship. So that, at the start, might be, hey, is there a sales letter that we can send out just to, with some attention-grabbing sort of information in it, just to get noticed or known, followed up with a phone call. You might get the opportunity to quote something for one or two out of 50 who are ready. And there will be some builders who are not happy right now with their plumber, and they're, you know, quite open. But there'll be a lot who have a relationship. And that's a good thing for us, actually, because those are the kind of people we want as clients who value relationships. So if it's harder to get in there, it's actually worth pursuing, because it's not going to just be about price. So that's huge. And so then all the strategies that you use to follow up and keep potential clients warm, such as your newsletter, is important, just getting something to them every 90 days. How can you add value to their business? So you might have a list of, on your email, that you find something interesting that's valuable, a new development, some solar heating stuff or some heating solutions or something for, you know, septic tanks or water treatment, whatever it is. Just flick that off to the builders that you've been in contact with. Hey, Richard, I thought this might be interesting, mate. You might be able to use it with some of your clients. If you just keep seeding that stuff on a consistent basis, you'll find after a while that people will start coming to you. Something will go wrong, or their plumber's too busy, or they need a little bit of help, and you get the foot in the door. So it's really having a system to build the relationship that I find works the best. Does that make sense, mate?
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. Like we talk about communication and catching up and making sure you know where you're at. Plumber and I catch up just about every second week. We'll go out for lunch on a Friday. Don't really talk about what the jobs or what's happening. We talk about fishing and motocross and
so it's relationships. And,
Yeah, it's about that. And then it just gives us a little chance to plug away. If there's anything that's on my mind, I'll bring it up. You know, it's like, oh, I see you guys are leaving a bit of rubbish on site. And oh, that's good. Yeah, I'll put that in our Thursday morning meeting and we'll get that sorted out. And, you know, and vice versa. His one is always that same question. Can you make sure you've got, you know, a fair chunk of work on those sites before we're turning up and doing one or two things? So it's the same issues everybody has, but it's a matter of getting them out in the open.
Because the relationship between builder and subcontractor is quite a close one, and you almost do become friends in some ways to a greater or lesser extent. So when you're marketing for new builders, you've actually got to get that know, like, trust thing happening, and that can take some time. And one thing I would say is proximity is power. So proximity means being in touch, being visible, actually pressing the flesh from time to time as well, and that requires you to actually have enough resources in your own business as a plumber and electrician to focus on the relationship building. So if you're constantly having to fight fires and, you know, fix the guys up or do, you know, any chase up invoices, and you don't have enough help in the office, you're not going to make the time to work on this stuff.
Yeah.
And time is the key. And people like Mark, who I mentioned before, and Brad, and a bunch of other clients, Johnny, etc., they spend time working on these relationships, which is what the key thing is.
Yeah, if I could add to that, Tony, I think if you were sort of relaxed, I guess we've talked about this a bit in the past, Tony, that if you're really wanting a job and you're really keen, sometimes there's just nothing you can do to get that job. But if you're a bit more relaxed about and got your back house and your systems in place, then you're a bit more relaxed and a bit freer to you know, hey, look, I was just wondering if I could help you guys out with any work coming up. Sometimes it becomes, you know, how you approach it, I think is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, massive. Non-attachment to the outcome, which is something we talked about at the sales webinar as well. If you come across as desperate, it's not a good look. It smells bad.
Yeah.
And I think the other things, guys, apply as well is, like, how does your business look? You know, does it look professional? Does your website look trick? You know, does the builder see nice vans around? You guys have uniforms, all that sort of stuff plays into building that unique selling proposition. I think that's massively important.
Yeah, we live and die by our subbies because, you know, we're in the job, on the job, and our subbies are coming in and out, and especially our alterations, you know, the lady of the house is quite often home, or if they're not home, they come home and they know that the plumbers have been. So if there's three guys slopping around their house with the bloody plumbers crack chain, it's not a good look. So that reflects on us, and we do get feedback from the clients. Oh, it's nice to have, you know, your guys and the plumbers there, and vice versa. We'll get jib stoppers, you know, them saying, oh, everybody's really good, but we were disappointed with, and they'll pick out, you know, one trade. You know, that makes a difference, or takes the shine off the job, and by the shine off the job makes it harder to get paid, and takes you longer to get paid, and all that sort of stuff.
I think one thing, having coached you know, several builders, and obviously through you know, plumbers coach with the working with you guys, is sometimes the builders actually got a really hard job because they're the meat in the sandwich, and so we have to do the best we can to make them look really good to their clients as well, and that's a big part of it.
Yeah, talking to that. So if we took, and maybe a question coming up, but about trying to get paid from your builder earlier than later, or by the 20th. So it comes down to communication. Hey, look, you know, I've got 4, I've got 10 staff. I've got to pay as well. I've got my GST to pay. How are we going? Are we going to get paid? Quite often a builder, although it's not kosher, but will go, oh, no, look, I haven't been paid from that last job yet. I can't pay you. And, you know, your comeback should be, oh, okay, so how are we going with those other jobs? We've done X amount of work for you. Surely we can get paid part of that to keep the ball rolling. So it shouldn't be an excuse from the builder that just because they haven't got paid, or you can come back and say, well, so there wasn't anything wrong with our plumbing or our electrical, was there? That was all kosher. And sometimes it may come down to educating your builder, like, okay, do you guys take deposits before you do these jobs so you can keep your cash flow going? Do you take progress payments, or are we just waiting 3 months after you finish the job and arguing about the painting wasn't quite right and that's what's holding everything up? So sometimes if you've been in business a bit longer than your builder, because there's builders going out on their own every second day, that you have to sort of start educating them that, oh, hey, this is how the industry works. You know, we've got mouths to feed as well.
Yeah, I think actually Chris was on the line and said they've, you know, increased their rates a while ago, and several of their builders are like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I should probably do the same. So, yeah. Okay, cool. Well, we might start to wind things up. So if you've got questions that you want to ask for Richard, look, blast them through now, and we can cover them off. That would be awesome. One question I have had that's come up is, do you prefer that all variation work is signed off by you or the owner prior to the work being undertaken, or do you find it time consuming to the job and just accept responsibility from verbal instruction?
Yeah, that accepting verbal instructions is recipe for disaster. I think in my business, how I run is that some stuff you can get verbal, like, nah, just go ahead and I'll cover it. Because a lot of ours is charge up, and we've got a plan, and you know, potentially there's, well, sometimes there's no plan. It's just like we're refitting this bathroom, and then a classic one is, oh shit, we need a temping valve. We need to put one in. And it's like, oh, shit, I haven't allowed for it. So it's sort of, it's not the plumber's responsibility just to pay for it because the builder hasn't allowed for it. The builder's got to be, you know, either go back to the client and say, hey, look, we've got an issue here. It needs to be upgraded, or so from that side of it. But yeah, definitely I like to get, like, I'll give our plumber and our electrician verbal, and they know that's all right, though. They can charge me for it, and we'll get through. Through my clients, I always get it signed off.
Yep. Key thing is, if the builder's the head contractor, they need to get the variation signed.
Yeah. I think you've got to have...
The plumber saying, oh, I thought you had it covered.
Oh, look, if my plumber's out doing that and say, oh, I need a temping valve, they'll communicate and ring me and say, hey, look, it's not going to work unless you put another temping valve in. I say, right, okay, yeah, go ahead. That's enough from us. If he says, I can't go any further until I get something signed and emailed back to my boss, and I'm going to go, you're starting to annoy me now. So you've got to have that verbal that, you know, he can maybe email it through to you later. I think a big thing, coming back to processes and times though, is that I quite like it that my plumber, as soon as he finishes, he's got enough grunt in the office, just, it's normally within a couple of days, I get an invoice. It's fresh, it's like, well, would that go? And that's like, oh yeah, that's right, temping valve. If he sends it in a month's time, we've already done another 20, 30 jobs, and I'm like, what the, and start getting annoyed. So you've got to have those invoices in quick. That's what
yep.
works for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, huge. Okay, awesome. So we might just finish the, like, Richard will stay on the line, and we can have, if you've got more questions, we can ask those at the end. There's a couple of other things we want to blast through before we finish up. So I might just put Richard on mute for a second there, mate.
Yes, guys. Make sure we've got,
yep. Right. So, and I'll just turn the webcam off. All right. So you guys can just put your hands up if you can still hear us. All good? Awesome, thank you. Okay, so yeah, that's good stuff there. And we can, if you've got any other questions, just think up them and we'll touch them on the end. So these systems and processes that Richard talked about are obviously really, really helpful for growing the business. And one of the clients up in Auckland, Stuart Glading from Alpha Plumbing, he's put these systems in place, plus the back costing systems and the marketing systems and streamlining his office. So through working through the program, and he's blown up the gross profit there by 12K a month plus. He's systemized his business. He's hired a couple of new plumbers recently as well, and he's found that as he's improved the business, he's actually had a couple of guys in ply to work with him as well. And Stuart and Claire have taken 3 weeks off in Hawaii as well. And one of the things that Stuart mentioned by actually growing the relationships with his builders and getting the numbers in his business sorted, some of those key things that Richard talked about, is that it sort of took him 40 years to sort his numbers out. And he learned how to price the jobs and increase those profit margins, you know, within 3 months of just working through the program by learning how to manage those numbers properly. So it's very important to do those things and get them sorted. So where to from here, guys? Well, if you're on the program, a lot of the resources we talked about today, the checklists, the processes for newsletters, direct mail, scripts, etc., for chasing up and actioning your work with the builders are on the membership site, so jump in there and download those. If you've got any questions about them, what to find, just let us know here in the office. That'd be awesome. And look, there's in the Plumber's Six Way Strategies there's a bunch of processes and techniques that we can use to put into our 90-day plan. So that's in the membership site as well, just for that library of strategies. And make sure you put them into your 90-day plan. And as I said, the key strategy that I've found works the best is what I call customer farming. If you just approach your builders once and expect to get results, you'd probably be disappointed. It actually requires an ongoing, consistent effort to build the relationship, to make sure you stay in proximity, you get some information in the hand regularly and build that relationship. So having a process for that customer farming is huge. And you include that in your 90-day plan. That's what keeps you accountable. Stick that on the wall. Okay, and with all the stuff, you have a crack at it, download the resources, you flick them through to the team and we can have a look through them and give you the feedback to make sure you've got the best chance for quick success. So guys, just want to say a big thanks to Richard for being on the call today. It's been awesome to have you on call, mate, and you've done really well, so you should be really proud of the efforts you've put in. And I'm just going to see if there's any questions that... that we have. So if you have any questions, blast them through now, guys, and we can answer them. Trish is just saying, I'm having trouble getting the resources as not coming up as a PDF file. Okay, Trish, we'll get dangerous. We'll have a look into that. If you can note that down, Damon, just to check that out. And if anyone else is having any issues, just let us know as well. Okay. All right, so if you've got any questions, guys, just blast them through and we can answer those before we finish up. And if you want to get a strategy session, just jump onto that web address there and put your details in. Awesome, guys. Okay, so I haven't got any more questions there. Okay. All right. Question. Okay. So question is, and I'll just... unmute there. If you can click the button again, Richard, does Richard put a percentage on top of the subcontractor's quotes? I can probably answer that one.
Shit, yeah.
Yes. Definitely. Yep. Okay. There we go, mate. Yep. So that was Trish's question. Definitely put a margin on. Yep. That's right, isn't it, Richard?
Oh, yeah.
No, yeah. Put it, you like making money?
Yeah, it does help. I do. Now, that can differ, generally I put a margin across the thing. Now, when it gets into big alterations, we have to declare what our margin is in our contract. So, that's around about 15%, to be fair. So it's not huge, but technically it's a little bit, really doing a whole heap of work for it. But yeah, no, you need to have enough margin. And what that's for is when that timing valve needs to be replaced and you haven't allowed for it, then you've got to have something in there for it.
Yep. Okay. Cool. Next question from Tamari. Thanks, mate. Richard, what are your thoughts on supplying fixtures and appliances yourself, or getting the plumber's supply?
Yeah, it can be a difficult one. Like for myself and my business, it just worked out better that I supply it. Now, how we run that with our plumbers, I supply everything outside of the wall. He supplies everything inside the wall, so or under the floor. And so how that works is, for me, is that I can get the clients to go and make selections. So take it back a step. In a general bathroom, I'll say, look, you know, I've allowed for a toilet, a vanity, and a bath at X amount per unit. And I've got pictures that I can send them, or you go in and have a look at my suppliers. So same thing, I've got a close relationship with our supplier who I send them into. They price up what they want or versions of that, and they might send back. And so then I talk to the owner and say, hey, look, I've allowed $1,100 for that shower. You've got the Rolls Royce and it could be $2,000. The difference is, if you want to go with that, is a variation of X amount, or vice versa. If they say no, actually we don't want you to supply the shower, we're going to go and get one from Bunnings. So that's fine. You can go and get one, but we've got no guarantee or warranty under it. We'll install it properly, but if
something goes wrong, then it fails. There you go. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So I think that's all the questions. So one more. Hang on. Here we go. What would you consider a good per fixture rate, including all in wall plumbing?
Yeah, so I work on about $650 per unit, but then there'd be more so I think I've got a rate of $925 or something for fitting off under a kitchen sink with a waste disposal and setting up a dishwasher. So generally that works out pretty well for me at $650. Then there's other added extras like per roof penetration. Then there's obviously the drainage side of it.
Cool. Awesome. All right. Well, hey, mate, look, thanks heaps for your time. Awesome to hear what you've got to say. And not too many curly questions. We've been kind of nice to you today. Good. Haven't been too hard on you. There's another question here. Thanks for the webinar, Tony. Very useful information from Richard. Please pass on my thanks from Sean. Awesome. Yeah, so big thanks, man. And keep up the good work.